Welcome to The Romantic Side of Suspense with Sarah Hemmerker. In each episode, she'll talk with your favorite romantic suspense authors. They will take you behind the scenes of the writing process, giving excerpts from their writing, and share stories about their writing life.
One Final Target by Janice Cantori. Two wounded heroes, shattered by tragedy and paralyzed by guilt, must find their footing and work together to catch a killer. A warrant service in the San Bernardino Mountains goes horribly wrong when an IED blast kills four police officers. Devastated by the loss of her team, the lone survivor, Long Beach Sergeant Jody King, struggles with her guilt and grief, especially as the case remains open with no clear leads or suspects. Weeks after the explosion, Jody retires from the police department and returns to the mountain bomb site seeking peace and resolution, only to find herself in the crosshairs once again. Sam Gresham just happens to be in the right place at the right time when shots are fired at Jody. The newest detective for the county sheriff's department, Sam is assigned to work the IED, his first case back after his own traumatic loss. While Sam sees an opportunity to help Jody heal from her lingering scars, Jody hopes fresh eyes will bring new insight to the investigation, because after this latest shooting, one thing seems clear. Jody has always been the intended target, and the threat may be much closer to her than anyone wants to admit.
On this episode of The Romantic Side of Suspense, my guest is Janice Cantori. She's a former Long Beach, California police officer of 22 years, and she now writes suspense novels. So welcome to my show, Janice.
Thank you very much. Very glad to be here.
So let's just dive right in with some fun questions, I think, just about your writing life. What's your favorite spot for reading or reflecting on your current work in progress? Where do you like to go?
Well, there's actually a coffee shop near me that is perfect for me. I actually like to be in a noisy place because it makes me concentrate on what I'm writing on. I find that if it's too quiet, I want to do anything but write. So I go to this coffee shop when it first opens. I sit down with a cup of coffee, open my computer, and that's usually where I do my best, most productive work. So that's my favorite place. Can't always go there, but that is my favorite place.
And so what's your go-to when you need to pick me up to keep writing? Is it coffee or something else?
Usually it's reading. I'll find I'll have to search for an author that – the author that I read when I first got started is a guy named Robert Crace. And just his writing style. For some reason, it just seems to spark in my mind, do it this way, do it that way. Either that or I will pick up a writing book. I have several different books on writing that generally help me, too, if I get stuck or am confused about what I wrote the day before. Sometimes that happens.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it does happen, readers. We sometimes do get confused or sometimes... Yeah, we're not sure how we're going to tie it all together. What about the titles for your books? How do you come up with those? Do they usually have a publisher, so do they usually stick or do they get tweaked?
No,
the two-part question.
Not a single one of my titles has stuck. It has always been changed. They will generally do the research. They'll look up and see, like this last book, the book that is with the editor right now, the title that I titled it is just too common. There's too many that have that same name.
Yeah.
So I totally get that. But usually when I first started, I was writing series, so they wanted the names to make sense in the series. And they actually, to be honest with you, they do an awesome job. I can't complain about any of the titles at all.
But it sounds like you still title your books, though, so that you know you're not just writing book three in whatever series or.
No, yeah, I always do title it, but I'm never surprised when they want to change it. So.
Right. That's always fun working with publishers on that. You know, and it's even challenging because I'm like hybrid. I've had some books traditionally published, and I've had books, you know, that I've indie published, and even the indie published ones, you know, it's, you want to get that, you know, that title that grabs the reader's attention. And sometimes it's just a really, really hard. Yeah, you do a lot of research. You ask people, you know, I'm always like, hey, what do you think about these titles? And but it's hard to write a book if it's just like book A or...
No, I can't do that. I know people always say work in progress, WIP, and I don't know, to me yep. that just sounds not very off-putting, so I never do that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even want to work on that. Yeah, so I might put that at the end of the book title, but I always have some sort of title for the book. So, and that leads, and you talked a little bit about this in our, when we did a quick takes interview on One Final Target, but the inspiration for your plots, how do you find that inspiration?
Usually, for the most part, it's from a new story, something that I happen to see that totally sit down and ask the what if questions, you know, what if this happened, what if that happened. Usually that's how it works. A couple of my books, though, were inspired by stuff that happened when I was working as a police officer. The very first book was inspired by, I was working as a juvenile detective, and we had this boy, I think, I forget now how old exactly he was, but he was maybe 16, and he had killed a crossing guard and put her in the trunk of his car and was driving around showing his friends. So anyway, that's very bleak, but when I came to work and he was there, because at that point in time in California, we couldn't put kids in jail. He just sat on a bench. Anyway, I just remember looking at him and thinking to myself, but what if he didn't do it? Now, in that particular case, he did do it. I don't recall now the disposition. However, but that was the genesis for Accused. What if somebody is accused of something horrible like that, but he really didn't do it? And in Accused, it's only the police officer that believes that he's innocent. So that was where that came from. And then other things, like I was in, took place in, I worked during the Rodney King riots. And so I always wanted to write something that had to do with police being confronted by riots.
Yeah.
And so that's where Code of Courage came from. So anyway, so it's a variety of things that, all that to say, I get my ideas from a variety of things.
Yeah, I think that's one of the, that's one of the questions I think we often get from readers, you know, how do you come up with your plots? How do you come up with so many of them? And
right.
I never quite know. I think my answers, and maybe you have this experience too, Janice, I feel like they kind of disappoint them a little bit. I mean, like, it's maybe a newspaper article. It could be, like you said, something that happened on the job, whether you work for law enforcement or not. We see things. We, you know, we're always asking that what if kind of thing, and sometimes it's just out of the blue. You're just like daydreaming or something, and you're like, ah, huh, that would be interesting. You know, so it's just like a bunch of different ways, and which I think is fascinating. I always love to hear how authors get their inspiration, but I kind of understand it. It's because it is from all over. It's never just one thing. Now, I guess if you only had one book in you, it might be one thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know about you, but I have so many ideas. I will never be able to write all the books I have. I mean, the ideas for books I have in my head, because they're just too many. Too many.
Exactly, and there's not enough time in the day.
There is not enough time in the day. What are we going to do about that? I mean, come on, they ought to give us more writing time. I feel like, you know, we get cheated or something. So,
exactly.
So, but speaking of readers, like the questions I said, how do you connect with readers? What's one of your favorite ways that you hear from readers or to be able to talk to readers?
Well, my favorite used to actually be book signing. But I have not done a book signing in a long time. They seem to, you know, the bookstores disappeared. And then after COVID, when I lived in Hawaii, I lived in Hawaii for 4 years, and there were no Christian bookstores anywhere on the island I lived on. So that's kind of gone away. Now, one thing I like to do is keep track or keep in touch with them on Facebook, I'm on a page with four other authors and the Romantic Suspense A-Team. And people can join us, and Thursdays is my day to post. And so I really like posting interesting questions and interacting with readers like that. It's been fun. I mean, I would prefer being in a bookstore sitting and seeing people in person, but since I don't have that option at this point in time, I really enjoy connecting with readers on Facebook.
Yeah,
I'm not
and
really
I love...
technical, so Facebook is like as technical as I get. I mean, I'm so impressed by your podcast and all the stuff that you do. I mean, that just strikes me as somebody who's incredibly organized and committed, and I'm just impressed.
Well, thank you. Honestly, this podcast came about because I'm like, I need new content for my website and a post on social media, and I don't want to write anything else.
Gotcha.
Let me just talk, I love talking with other writers. It's fun. Yeah. And hopefully my listeners and your readers and my readers enjoy that as well. So we mm-hmm. are almost out of time for this interview, but let's close with, this may seem like a downer question, but I love that it's one you wanted to talk about. What is the most frustrating aspect do you find of writing romantic suspense?
Well, it's the organization. It's making sure that everything is in a right kind of time frame, right kind of timeline. Like the two can't get together too soon.
Right.
But then it has to be interesting how they connect, and you don't want cliches. You know, it can't be cliches. And they actually have to be both incredibly likable characters where you can totally understand why they'd be attracted to one another. And sometimes, you know, staying away from cliches is really difficult,
yeah.
I find, in romantic suspense.
Yes. I mean, they're cliches for a reason.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, because we can relate to them, it is challenging. I was writing a scene the other day. I'm like, I can't say that. Everyone says that. I have to say it another way. You know, it's, you know, one of those meet cute kind of things. And I was like, but the cliche part, you know, was whatever. I don't remember what it was now, but it was something that if I said it, everyone would be like, yeah, that's a cliche. But it is. It's hard to make it believable and, mm-hmm. you know, in all that kind of way that, our readers like. So readers, when you read our books and you realize that we have very few cliches in there, it's because of our blood, sweat, and tears trying to get them to not have cliches. So
exactly.
But I do love the romantic suspense part of it. Like you said, is that giving them the happily ever after part, which I really love about writing romantic suspense.
Right.
I get to add that. I love the mystery and trying to keep them guessing. I try not to reveal who's behind the danger and stuff until closer to the end, but I do love that happily ever mm-hmm. after.
Yeah.
So, well, thank you for sharing on my show today, Janice. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate that, Sarah. And it's been great to meet you and talk to you.
Now an excerpt from One Final Target by Janice Cantori. Sergeant Jody King tapped the butt of her handgun with her index and second fingers, an outward sign of inward anxiousness. She figured when she stopped being anxious about serving a warrant, it was time to do something else. Unease would keep her on her toes. Adding to the unease, the frigid pre-dawn temp. Cold and fidgety described her team. Everyone was ready to move. Snow had fallen earlier and was threatening again. Jody checked her team and saw four determined expressions and four spirals of icy breath swirling up into the air. A beach girl at heart, Jody felt out of her element in the mountain cold, but the target was here, and they would take him into custody. She and her officers, affectionately called RAT, an acronym for Recidivist Apprehension Team, were staged beside a vacant home on the west side of the target address. Paramedics were present just in case, And since they weren't in the city but in the county's jurisdiction, a deputy sheriff also stood by, monitoring the situation. "Ready?" she asked.
"You bet, Chief,"
Tiny Peters answered first. At 6'5 and 250 pounds, the ex-football player held the universal key, the battering ram they'd use on the door. Convinced Jody would be chief one day, he never called her sergeant. Gail Schuyler nodded, her cop expression firmly in place. Tim Evers popped his bubble gum as a way of saying yes. Gus Perkins gave his trademark thumbs up. Of course they were ready. Rat consisted of the best of the best. Jody would accept nothing less. She ignored the hitch in her thought process that reminded her they were one day early and one man short. Proper planning would compensate for the change. Time to go.
All right, let's do it.
Jody moved her people as a unit from the staging van across the neighboring yard to the overgrown, completely unkempt front yard of their target. She and Gus trotted to the left side of the door. Tiny stepped to the right side. Schuyler and Evers were the entry pair. Tiny gave the announcement.
"Norman Hayes, Long Beach PD. We have a warrant. Open the door."
He repeated the phrase twice more. No response. One practiced swing and the door splintered apart, leaving a gaping opening. Schuyler and Evers, weapons at the ready, moved in first, going left. Jody and Gus were directly behind them, moving right. In short order, the efficient twosomes cleared the small two-bedroom, one-bath mountain cabin. Jody took a breath as disappointment hit like a punch. This was supposed to be a sure thing. Norman Hayes had two felony warrants out of Long Beach and numerous connections here in San Bernardino. Besides her confidential informant, the sheriff's office had confirmed Hayes was living in the house. Holstering her weapon, Jody surveyed the living room, conscious of a few odd things. The smell of fresh paint, the warmth of the room from a heater, and the neat and tidy nature of the inside. While the outside of the house was obviously neglected, the living room was decidedly minimalist and even cozy.
"See what you can find. I can't believe Jukebox was so completely off."
"I don't know why you have so much faith in Juke,"
Gus said as he walked into the kitchen.
"He's too many fries short of a Happy Meal."
"But he's from here and he hears things."
Jody frowned as she looked at the cozy room. "Someone has been living here, and recently." Glancing at Gus, she saw dismay on his face.
"What do you see?"
"Coffee is warm."
"Shower's wet,"
Schuyler called from the bathroom. Tiny stopped his progress toward the back of the house, cocking his head, listening. He and Jody both circled back and ended up at the front door. Jody put her hand on her service weapon.
"He must still be here. What did we miss?"
She looked up, wondering about an attic. A loud click sounded in the kitchen, like a big switch being pulled. This was followed by a hissing of released air or gas. Gus looked down at his feet, then raised his head, eyes wide. Jody turned toward Tiny and saw a look of absolute horror on his face.
"It's a trap! Everyone out!"
Tiny grabbed Jody by the shoulders. She resisted, wanting more of an explanation. In a split second, he physically lifted her up and carried her out the door.
"What?"
The question died in her throat as Tiny literally threw her into the yard.
"Get clear!"
he yelled as he strode back into the house, calling for Gail and Tim to get out. Momentum from Tiny's toss propelled her across the yard, but Jody couldn't flee.
"I have to save my friends."
Catching her breath, she rolled to her feet and pivoted to go back in, too late. The horrific boom of the blast obliterated Tiny's yells and exploded chaos in Jody's frantic thoughts. A punch of hot air, much stronger than Tiny, lifted her from the ground as if she were a rag doll and pitched her across the yard again. Jody's stomach lurched, her eardrums popped,
and pain screamed up her right arm as it took the full force of her landing, the thin layer of snow doing nothing to cushion her fall. All around, the sky rained flaming debris. Scrambling to her left side, she pushed herself to her knees, ignoring the bits of jagged glass abrading her palm. The house she'd just been inside became a fireball. Heat hit her face in a wave, and Jody watched in horror as angry flames consumed the house and her co-workers. Staggering to her feet and holding her good arm in front of her face to shield it from the heat, she stumbled toward the inferno, screaming for Tiny, Gus, anyone. Voices clamored behind her.
"Sergeant King, get back! Get back!"
Someone grabbed her.
My guys! They're still in there!"
She tried to pull away, but the arms were too strong.
"No one could have survived that blast," the voice said as the man dragged her back.
Another explosion rocked the house, and a wave of searing, noxious heat rolled over them. The foul smoke from the burning log home brought hot tears that stung her eyes. Coughing and fighting, Jody could not prevent herself from being dragged to safety. The paramedics forced her behind the waiting ambulance as fast-approaching sirens from alerted fire personnel drowned out her complaints. A swirling cloud of black smoke snaked across the cloudy sky, smearing it like ink. As darkness closed in, one thought ran through Jody's mind. How did something so routine go so horribly wrong?
Thanks for listening to The Romantic Side of Suspense with Sarah Hammerker. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a review. You can sign up to receive notifications of upcoming podcasts and listen to previous editions at sarahhammerkerfiction.com.